Welcome. You're listening to Latin Waves with your hosts, Sylvia and Stuart Richardson. Latin Waves is a syndicated show produced in the studios of CJSF Radio in Burnaby, BC. Latin Waves is more than just hot rhythms. This is a show about community, about creating a culture that is inclusive and based on fairness. Because everyone deserves dignity, respect, and has something to contribute. A new world is possible, and it all starts with us.
So clearly, current standards don't make it. They don't meet the need. We need, clearly, new standards. Standards that deal with the new conditions that these wood monopolies have imposed on the workplace. And just refresh our memory about those. That's 7 days a week production, 10 hours a day, a shift. That means that not doing the regular maintenance and the cleanup that has been done in the past. It means thinner saws, which are giving up a finer dust. There are other conditions that I probably am not aware of, most likely not aware of, but the workers will know about. And they need to be the factor, the human factor, and the social consciousness that is brought to bear on establishing what ought to be the current conditions, the current requirements, the current standards.
That's the voice of longtime activist and journalist Charles Borland. On this week's show, we speak to Charles about the recent tragedies in the British Columbia sawmills and what workers need to do to ensure their safety in the mills, as government and these large monopolies have abandoned their responsibility. Stay tuned. 1,000 Canadian workers are killed every year in the job. Average working class people who go to work, play by the rules, and don't come home at night. Today is April 28th, which is the National Day of Mourning for lost and killed workers on the job. Online to speak about this important day is Charles Borland. Charles Borland is former longtime host of Wake Up with Co-op on Co-op Radio, and he currently still does the show Discussion on Wednesday nights. Welcome to the show, Charles.
Thanks a lot, Stuart. Always good to be on your show.
Charles, What's going on in this country when 1,000 workers a year are killed in the job? Tens of thousands are injured. Is it getting better or worse, or should we just accept this, Charles, as normal?
Well, it should never be accepted as normal. Absolutely not. It's a huge loss of workers. It's a huge tragedy. And it's absolutely reflection of the egoistic drive of owners of capital who put making their profit before everything, including workers' safety. And so it's very much a major social issue in Canadian society. It's a worldwide issue. I've forgotten the number of workers killed worldwide, Stuart, but it's astronomical. And it's a mayhem, actually. And they only talk about it on one day a year. You know, once a year we go to these events, and speeches are made every year about how this has to be brought to an end. But frankly, the 1,000 workers killed a year has been pretty consistent for years on end. If you just take the last decade, that's an army of 10,000 people. So, you know, it is a terrible reminder that this system, which they brag about on the TV about capitalism being the greatest of all systems, you know, it is a human being eating system, as well as devastating Mother Earth. So we have to give very serious thought how to curb the power of these monopolies to impose work conditions that are unsafe.
Charles, you're quite right, and it's not just killed workers, which is, of course, is a terrible tragedy. It's the day-to-day recklessness of how we treat workers. I'll give you an example. In the UK, where I'm from, workers are allowed to have a seat if they do customer service work. They're not standing on their feet for 9 hours. But in Canada, they frown upon if the worker sits down and has a rest while they're working or serves the customer while they're sitting, which seems to me quite barbaric that we force people to stand 10 hours at a time. What kind of things, Charles, need to improve for the safety of workers and the general health of workers who get up and play by the rules and pay the bills and run this economy?
Well, let's start here in British Columbia. You know that when Gordon Campbell took over in 2001, a number of the remaking of British Columbia actions he took was to completely renovate the Workers' Compensation Board. Now, workers' compensation came in early in the 20th century, around 1915, 1916, something like that. And it was basically to deflect workers from suing their employers for unsafe conditions, because a number of very important legal lawsuits had been successful against employers. So they wanted to avoid that. They said, okay, well, let's set up an insurance mechanism that will give workers their wages and look after them when they're injured. And that became the Workers' Compensation Boards and Workers' Compensation Acts. Now, what the Campbell government did was they cut way back on the amount of personnel the WCB would have, and they first of all they renamed it. Now, look how they renamed it. They said work safe. Okay, what does work safe imply? It implies that the onus of for safety is on the worker. Worker, if you work safe, you will be okay. Well, that's not the name that it should have. It should be called safe work, which means that when you go to work, it's safe, and the workplace is safe. So the onus is on the owner of capital. But very clever use of words here to put the whole psychology on to the worker. It's not the worker who is responsible for the safety. It's the owner of capital who is responsible. And so just right off the bat, the way they have organized it is wrong. And then by cutting back the number of personnel, what we have, Stuart, now is a new phenomenon in the Lower Mainland, and particularly in the north in heavy industry. We have a phenomenon of a third-party intervener who interfaces between the capital owner of the enterprise, whether in the north it's the big enterprise, the big industrial enterprises dealing with raw resources, right? So you have the wood industry, pulp and paper mills, sawmills, gas, and so on and so forth. And so these new companies, they're responsible for what they call risk management. For example, there's a company called International Quest Engineering. And International Quest Engineering has among its many clients, and anybody can go to their website, and you'll see that two of their clients were Babine Lake Sawmill, which blew up on January 20th, and Lakeland Sawmill, which blew up just on April 23rd. So you have to ask yourself, well, what is this International Quest Engineering all about? What is their responsibility in terms of keeping the place safe and the place clean and so on and so forth? One has to look into this third-party business. Then another question one has to ask is, for example, because these two explosions are uppermost in our minds and we need to deal with them in BC, because the lumber industry and the wood industry has been the backbone of manufacturing in our province for 100 years. So we need to look at what's going on in the wood industry very, very seriously. So one thing that has happened, Stuart, that again reflects the capital centered, the issue of monopolies having rights, but the society or the public not having rights. Or let's put it this way, the interests of private owners get their will politicized because they have the political influence and the political inside track, and the public and the workers being depoliticized, not having agencies, mechanisms, possibilities to make their decision-making dominant in the society. They're marginalized. So, for example, one of the conditions in sawmills in BC historically, and my father worked in the industry for a good part of his life, I worked in the industry for a number of years as a student, and in the old days, you worked in a sawmill 8 hours a day, 8 hours a shift, got a half an hour lunch in the day shift, you got a 7 hour day and the night shift. And you worked 5 days a week. So you came home to your family, you had a weekend, you could take your kid to hockey, you could do something with your family, whatever you liked on the weekend, and you had a chance to rest. And in that time, Stuart, the maintenance workers would clean and repair the mill. They would fix machinery, they would clean the place up, and the mills ran that way for years on years. But a few years ago, the companies, hungry for more profit, said, no, let us do modern shift. We'll have you work 10 hours a day, and then we'll work 7 days a week, and we'll rotate you around the week. And you put in your four-day shift, and then you get 3 days off or whatever, however they worked it. But, of course, you may want to work some overtime so you could put in an extra shift and blah, blah, blah. So what has happened as a result of that, Stuart? What has happened is that the workforce is exhausted. The workforce does not have the regular two-day weekend anymore. The workforce is so tired at the end of the work week. Like, I interviewed Sam Tom yesterday. He is the plant chairman of the Babine Lake sawmill that blew up. And I said to him, I said, what is the result of this 7-day, 10-hour day, Sam? He said, Charles, what happens is, the workers come home very exhausted. But a second thing, which is very, very important, is that they don't have time to clean the mills properly. They don't have time to do regular maintenance. So here again, the interest of a monopoly capitalist to maximize his rate of profit, to keep those mills busting their ass for 7 days a week, nonstop, 10 hours a day, is more dominant in terms of decision-making, in terms of what really happens in the society, than the workers who say, hey, we're the producers here, we're the human beings who make these trees into boards of lumber that make houses. We're the people who transform raw nature into something useful for human society, and yet you don't give us the credit for saying we need an 8-hour day, which we've been fighting for 100 years or more, and we don't have it yet. We want an 8-hour day, and we want a 5-day week. So this is part of the reality. Now I'm going to give you a third factor in this disaster that took place in these two mills. The capitalist is always looking for technological change, and in fact, we have always had it taught to us that the reason we need capitalists is because they're responsible for increasing productivity, that because of the profit motive, they're always looking for new and better ways to do things, and therefore they are responsible for taking the society forward in a progressive direction. That's the sort of general line that we're taught. But the fact is, you take the question of technological change. Recently, they have discovered with new kinds of steels that they can get a saw blade that is much thinner than the old saw blade. Well, that sounds good because obviously the smaller the girth of the cut, the smaller, the less wood they turn into sawdust, the more lumber they're going to get out of their log. But if you can imagine, a very fine cut yields a very fine sawdust. A very fine dust that takes into the air. So now you add exhausted workers, you add not proper cleanup of the mills, you add a finer dust in the air, and what do you have here? You have a formula for an explosion. Now, everybody's talking about pine wood, that it's dead pine, it's worm-eaten, beetle-eaten trees, they're dry, and so on and so forth. Yeah, you know what? This is like, Stuart, having a discussion about how explosive is the gunpowder. It's gunpowder. Dust is dust. The well-known science of studying dust in workplaces is like this. There's a certain percentage of dust to a certain percentage of oxygen, and at that point, any spark, any source of flame, any even heat can turn that into a flashpoint, where you have an explosion. And this is well known in industries like grain handling, flour milling, sugar refining, aluminum production, because aluminum dust is explosive as hell. All these dusts are well known. They're well studied. And they have very, very elaborate safety mechanisms after disastrous grain elevator fires, flour mill fires, and so on, and explosions and so on. So they have, for example, they have spark-proof starter motors. They have or switches. They have spark-proof motors. They have monitoring systems. They have dust vacuuming systems, and so on. And so they take these precautions as a result of deaths and tragedies in the past and explosions, but the wood industry in BC is not prepared to do that. And I'm going to give you a direct quote here, Stuart, if I might.
Go ahead.
We have, listen to this. This is the owner, Greg Stewart. He's a representative of, president of Sinclair Group Force, which is, as I understand it, the owner of Lakeland Mill. He said, we did ramp up our housekeeping crew, he said, in an interview. And he, to quote him further, he says, "We were in the process of investigating a vacuum system to install in the mill." He said he didn't know the cost of equipment to augment the current dust clearing system. And then he says, quote, "You're not going to install a system like a vacuum system overnight." Now, why not? And I'm going to tell you why not. And he's, you know, from his capitalist logic, he's quite right. The reason why not to install expensive equipment like that in today's mills is because in the last number of years, Stuart, they have ravaged the forests of British Columbia. And they're desperate for new fiber. They don't know where they're going to get it from. As you know from the leaked memo about the change in wood policy, they're talking about wiping out reserve forest areas, wiping out parkland areas, and so on and so forth, to grab every little piece of tree they can grab. And then they talk about the pine beetle, you see. Well, the fact of the matter is, this profit-hungry industry that never involved the communities, never involved the workers to discuss what's a rational way to deal with this plague, actually facilitated the pine beetle. Not only they didn't stop it, they facilitated it. How did they do that? They drove logging roads right through forests that were infested with the pine beetle. Now, normally a pine beetle eats its way through the forest, you know, layer of trees after layer of trees. But when you open an artery right through the middle of the forest, you have given the pine beetle a highway to drive down. They fly right through that opening and infest the whole forest. And they have been doing that for years because they don't have a rational, sustainable approach to dealing either with the raw material, either with their equipment and their machinery, and most important, with the workers who actually do the processing of the tree into usable lumber and other wood products.
My heart goes out to the workers up there, and we talk, you know, you're talking about the owner saving money and this and that. What tragedy and what cost are now being borne by the people of Prince George? Are these mills being inspected? Of course, they say they're going to inspect them now, but is there any inspection at all? Is there any regulatory body at all that's going and looking at these things?
Well, as you know, there was a meeting on Wednesday, I think it was the 25th, and it involved the workers, what they call WorkSafe. I hate that name. I won't use WorkSafe. So Workers' Compensation Board and the government and the mill owners and the trade unions. And they discussed this matter, what to do. And then the Minister of Labor, if you recall that day, she said, well, we are going to insist that the mills be up to current standards. That's the phrase she used, current standards. Now, you don't need to be much more than, an intelligent average person to understand that current standard obviously isn't up to the mark. Remember, Stuart, these two explosions, January 20th at the Babine Lake sawmill in Burns Lake and the Lakeland sawmill in Prince George on just, you know, last Monday, the 23rd, these two explosions are unprecedented in BC history. There's never been a previous case of a sawmill exploding. So clearly, current standards don't make it. They don't meet the need. We need, clearly, new standards. Standards that deal with the new conditions that these wood monopolies have imposed on the workplace. And just refresh our memory about those. That's 7 days a week production, 10 hours a day a shift. That means that not doing the regular maintenance and the cleanup that has been done in the past. It means thinner saws, which are giving up a finer dust. There are other conditions that I probably am not aware of, most likely not aware of, but the workers will know about. And they need to be the factor, the human factor, and the social consciousness that is brought to bear on establishing what ought to be the current conditions, the current requirements, the current standards. And that is what is missing. You see, Stuart, I have to tell you that, like these big corporations, you know, they also organize wars of aggression abroad, you know, and they don't take into account the death and destruction of human beings and the loss of life. Unfortunately, that's just the case. On days like this, of course, they make very moving speeches. And I'm sure they speak sincerely from their heart when they say that they don't like, you know, all this loss of life and limb that goes on. But the fact of the matter is, it's those conditions of work that make them the maximum rate of profit. And here the man tells us, well, you're not going to put in a vacuum system overnight because it's too expensive. Well, there you have it. It's his money, as he regards it, his wealth, as he regards it, versus the safety and well-being of the worker. And so it is really, and this is now, this is a matter for the trade unions to take very, very seriously. If we are going to have our unions as representatives of the workers, they must be a fighting force. They must organize and train the workers to resist any unsafe conditions. The workers need the mentality to say to their employers, we're not working in these conditions. That mentality, that courage, that backbone and militancy is an absolutely necessary requirement to save their lives. And not only save their lives in the immediate sense of a mill blowing up, but to save the mills, to save the industry. Because a whole new approach, a new direction to the wood industry is immediately required, Stuart. We're going to lose this industry. And, you know, it's interesting because they're talking about, well, will these mills reopen? Everyone is saying, well, you know what, the fact of the matter is we've lost three or four mills in the last little while in fires, and two of them explosions, and nothing has been rebuilt. And the reason they're reluctant to rebuild is because they have wrecked our forests. In other words, there's a whole redirection needed for the wood industry in BC. We've talked about the need for value adding on these products. We've talked about the need to create new markets for domestically and internationally for a more sophisticated, labor-intensive product. And also reforesting. So they haven't replanted trees sufficiently to provide an ongoing source of wood. So these are all interrelated matters, but the most decisive one we're focused on today, and rightly so, because it is the day of mourning, is the life and limb of the workers. And I really believe that great poem by Bertolt Brecht, you know, that communist poet of Germany in the 1930s, and he said, workers, you must take over the leadership. And that's what is required in today's situation. It is really monopoly right of these big corporations to do what they like and have their interest politicized through the legislature and such, or public right. And the public right includes part of a public right, part of the public right is the right of workers to go to work and have a safe workplace and come home at the end of the day without the loss of limbs or terrible scarring burns that these workers have suffered. And we have to remember, we still have a worker here at GF Strong recovering from his wounds and burns he suffered up at Burns Lake at the Babine Mill explosion. And we have workers in intensive care from the Lakeland Mill explosion on just last Monday. So these workers are carrying the scars of this, how will I say, indifference. I won't even say indifference, maybe that's the wrong word to use. I'm sure the mill owners don't want the mills to explode. I don't believe that. I don't believe that they're saying explosions and running away with the insurance money. No, it's not like that. It's not like that at all. But it is the inevitable putting of their private interest before the public interest and before the interest of the workers. And it's no more clear to my mind than this owner saying, well, we're not just going to install a vacuum system overnight, you know. Well, why not?
Talk a little bit about our need to resist unsafe conditions.
To me, this is a matter of outlook of workers, and the outlook comes in waging struggle. The more workers collectives can get together, talk amongst themselves, build a unity amongst themselves as brothers in production, brothers and sisters in production. Women workers are injured just as much as men workers are. They have to talk amongst themselves. They have to build links amongst themselves. The unions are there where they're unionized, where they're not unionized. They need to find ways and means of fighting, resisting, making their collective interests come forward. And taking stands. Of course workers will be sacked. Of course workers will, find retribution against them and so on and so forth. But this is what the owners are imposing on us. It is the owners who are waging the class war against the workers. I mean, that's the reality of the situation. It's the workers want to live a peaceful life. They want to go to work, make a livelihood, spend time with their family, get some education, more education, do various things in their lives, travel, whatever they want to do. And that's quite correct. But it's the owners of capital who are constantly driven by this damnable law that they keep facing every day, which is that the more of the money they put into high-tech equipment and high-tech product, the rate of profit goes down. And so, you know, the more workers they displace, the more the rate of profit goes down. So to get that rate of profit back up, they keep attacking the workers. They want to suck more and more out of their hides. They want to be more and more reckless with Mother Earth, ruin it, leave it a bloody scarred mess for us to pick up the pieces. And it's interesting, you know, the old idea of the capitalist captain of industry, you know, leading the way, it's not like that anymore. It's like guys sitting in these stock marketplaces and playing around with these computer figures and buying and selling and going for the big scores and, you know, bankrupting companies and taking over companies and selling them off for a huge price, like they did with McMillan Bloedel. When McMillan Bloedel was taken over by Weyerhaeuser, that big Yankee capitalist who came in as the CEO of McMillan Bloedel in 1999 and organized that takeover, he walked back home to the United States of America with $12 million in his pocket. Well, what happened as a result of that takeover? They closed down the research center in Burnaby. They shut down mills. They did their structural, you know, reorganization. Hundreds and hundreds of workers lost their jobs. And it's in the, and the wood industry's gone downhill continuously since. For this new generation of, you know, monopoly capitalists, they aren't even in the driver's seat of production anymore. They are wheeling and dealing. So they have become real parasites on the society, and they are really a block. And it is important for workers to understand that they must rely on themselves. They must take matters into their own hands. As Brecht says, they must take over the leadership. And that's what's crying out in the modern times, is for working people to be more and more active to block this craziness. Really, you know, it's kind of egoistical craziness to make profit and profit and profit.
It's quite incredible, and we just spoke to Duff Conacher from Democracy Watch in Canada, and he speaks in depth about the need for Canadians to start from scratch and rebuild this kind of fledgling democracy where people can break the law and have no recourse at our highest level. This needs to change. And in closing, Charles, just to reiterate that if you are a worker and you feel it's not safe, put down your tools, say something, talk to your coworkers, and hopefully we can make that number go down much, much lower.
Yeah, and the law says that you don't have to work at an unsafe site. Take care.
Thanks, Charles.
Bye-bye.
That was Charles Borland, longtime union activist, longtime journalist, former producer of Wake Up with Co-op, and he still does a very wonderful show on Wednesday nights at 7 p.m., 102.7, and Co-op Radio called Discussion. We have come to the end of our show, Latin Waves. Latin Waves is a weekly syndicated program produced and broadcast from the studios of CGSF Radio in Burnaby, BC. The program is available free of charge to campus and community stations across Canada and the U.S. For more information about our work or to support our efforts, please visit our website at www.latinwavesmedia.com. Bye for now.